Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Ready to dive into a new topic today?
Always.
All right. Well, today, we're going to be taking a look at something that most people don't even realize exists, but one we rely on every single day. It's the world of process control systems. PCS, for short.
Yeah, you know, you probably don't think about it much, but everything from keeping the lights on in your house to, ensuring there's clean water coming from your tap relies on these really intricate systems.
It's true. I mean, for this deep dive, you've provided us with a fascinating article. The title's a mouthful, Cybersecurity of Process Control Systems, written by Martin Van Honey, a senior process control engineer. And it paints a pretty stark picture, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, the article really kind of drives home the point that PCS security, you know, it's not just about protecting data, it's about protecting our physical world. You know, we're talking about power plants, water treatment facilities, manufacturing lines, you know, systems that, if compromised, could have real world, even catastrophic consequences.
Yeah, it's a bit unsettling when you think about it that way. The article points out that unlike traditional IT systems, many PCS were built, I don't know, before cybersecurity was a major concern.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of these systems are running on outdated protocols, lacking modern encryption, you know, making them incredibly vulnerable in today's interconnected world. It's like trying to secure a medieval castle with a flimsy wooden door.
Right. Right. And you can't just throw on a simple antivirus and call it a day.
Yep.
You know, these systems they're directly controlling physical processes.
Yeah.
What happens in the digital world can have, you know, immediate physical consequences in the real world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the article even mentions the vulnerability of endpoints, you know, like sensors and motors. A lot of these are provided by, you know, third parties can't be easily monitored or updated. So imagine, you know, a hacker gaining control of a sensor in a chemical plant. The results could be, you know, disastrous.
Okay, so we've got these critical systems that are inherently vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we even begin to secure something like that?
Right.
The article mentions something called the IEC 62443 standard.
Yes.
What exactly is that?
So the IEC 62443 standard is essentially a globally recognized framework specifically designed to secure PCS. And it really acknowledges that, you know, industrial environments have unique challenges and require a different approach to cybersecurity than your typical office network. Think of it as, you know, a blueprint for building a modern fortress around these vital systems.
A blueprint, huh?
Huh?
Okay, I'm intrigued. The article breaks down six steps to harden a control system based on this framework.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one focuses on something called network security perimeters. So like building a strong wall around the castle, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly. The idea is to create layers of security. So firewalls act as your first line of defense, controlling what traffic is allowed in and out of the network. Switches with lockable ports help prevent unauthorized devices from connecting. And network segmentation divides the system into smaller, isolated zones.
Gotcha. So if one part of the system is compromised, the damage is contained.
Yes.
Kind of like those bulkheads in a ship that prevent the entire vessel from sinking.
Precisely. Yeah. And the article also recommends, you know, disconnecting any unnecessary connections to the PCS network to reduce the attack surface, right? If a connection isn't absolutely essential, it's better to just eliminate it.
Minimize those entry points. Makes sense. And for those connections that are necessary, the article stresses the importance of encryption.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Encryption scrambles data in transit, making it unreadable to anyone without the proper decryption key. You know, think of it as sending a secret message in code. Even if someone intercepts it, they won't be able to understand what it says.
So we've built our walls and secured the gates. What's the next step in fortifying this digital fortress?
So step two focuses on something called workstation hardening, which basically means securing the computers that operators use to interface with the PCS. We're talking about locking down those systems to prevent unauthorized access or changes.
Okay, so no more checking personal emails or browsing the internet on the same computer that controls a nuclear reactor.
Definitely not. Yeah, the article specifically recommends applying something called the CIS hardening template, which is a set of best practices for securing a workstation's configuration.
Right.
It's all about reducing that attack surface and minimizing the damage that can be done if a workstation is compromised.
Sounds like a good idea. But even with a lockdown workstation, wouldn't a savvy hacker still be able to find ways to get in?
They might try, but the article outlines some additional steps to make that even harder.
Okay.
So one key recommendation is to dedicate workstations to specific functions. The fewer tasks a workstation performs, the fewer vulnerabilities it's likely to have.
So one computer for controlling the reactor, one computer for monitoring water levels, and so on.
Exactly. And of course, we can't forget about good old-fashioned antivirus software.
Right.
Regularly updating and scanning for malware is essential, even in these specialized environments.
But wouldn't a determined attacker still try to find ways around those defenses?
That's why the article emphasizes the importance of configuring the file system for authorized access only. So even if malware does manage to sneak in, limiting access to sensitive files can significantly contain the damage.
So even if they breach the walls, they can't get to the crown jewels.
Exactly.
I like it.
And speaking of limiting access, the article also reminds us to lock down those removable media drives. You know, think USB ports, external hard drives.
Oh, right. I hadn't even thought about that. Someone could just walk up with an infected USB drive and plug it in.
Exactly. It's a simple step, but it can prevent a lot of trouble. The article even suggests, you know, regularly rebooting workstations just to flush out certain types of malware that only reside in the computer's memory. It might seem like a low-tech solution, but it can be surprisingly effective.
So even in the world of high-tech industrial systems, sometimes the old-school solutions are still the best. Who knew?
It's all about layering those defenses, using a combination of, you know, high-tech and low-tech solutions to create a truly robust security posture. And speaking of defense in depth, the next step in that IEC 62443 framework is all about user account management.
Okay, let's dive into that. How do we manage user accounts in a way that enhances security?
Yeah, so the core principle here is limiting the damage that can be done if an account is compromised, right?
Right.
This means granting limited privileges to users so they only get access to the systems and data they absolutely need to do their jobs.
So no more giving everyone admin access just for convenience.
Yeah.
Makes sense, but I imagine that takes a lot more work to manage.
It does, but the security benefits are well worth the effort. And of course, you know, we can't forget about strong passwords.
Right.
Those sticky notes with passwords written on them are a major no-no in this world.
Right. I bet they have some pretty strict password policies in these environments.
Absolutely. Strong, unique passwords for each account are crucial. And that brings us to step four, which is all about keeping those security updates up to date. You know those annoying notifications we all get on our phones and laptops?
Yes.
Well, for PCS, those patches are absolutely critical.
Because outdated software is like an open invitation for hackers, right?
It is.
The article mentions tools that can automatically exploit vulnerabilities in outdated systems.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah, it is. Hackers are constantly looking for ways to exploit these weaknesses, so patching those holes quickly is crucial. And that leads us to step five, which is all about backup and recovery. Even with the best security measures in place, sometimes things go wrong.
So it's like having an escape route plan just in case the fortress is breached.
Exactly. A robust backup and recovery plan allows you to restore the system to a known good state, essentially wiping out any infection that might have taken hold. And the article really stresses the importance of having a clear strategy for when and how to recover, even if you don't have concrete evidence of an attack.
I guess it's better to be safe than sorry, especially when you're dealing with critical infrastructure. But how do you even begin to back up something as complex as a power grid or a chemical plant?
It's certainly not a simple task, but it's absolutely essential. A good backup and recovery plan will include, you know, regular backups of all critical data and configurations, as well as a detailed process for restoring the system in case of an incident.
So you're not just copying files, you're creating a blueprint for how to rebuild the entire system from scratch if necessary.
Exactly, yeah. And the article also recommends regularly testing those recovery procedures to make sure they actually work when you need them. You don't want to find out during a real incident that your backups are corrupted or your restoration process is flawed.
Right, right. Okay, we've covered five steps so far. What's the final piece of the puzzle when it comes to securing PCS?
So the sixth and final step outlined in the article is security monitoring and risk assessment. This is where things get proactive.
So it's not just about building walls and locking doors, but also having guards on patrol.
Yeah.
Constantly looking for signs of trouble.
That's a great analogy. Security monitoring packages are like those guards, constantly scanning logs, network traffic, and even processor activity for anything suspicious.
And what about risk assessments?
Mm-hmm.
What role do they play in this ongoing security process?
Risk assessments are like those strategy meetings where you identify potential weaknesses and develop plans to address them. And the article emphasizes the importance of conducting regular risk assessments, not just during the initial design phase, but throughout the system's entire life cycle.
Because the threat landscape is constantly changing,
Yeah.
and what was secure yesterday might not be secure today.
Exactly. New vulnerabilities are discovered all the time, and attackers are constantly developing new tactics. Risk assessments help you stay ahead of the curve and ensure that your defenses are up to date.
So it's not a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process of evaluation and improvement. The article mentions something called security levels, or SLs. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, so security levels, or SLs, are a way to classify different zones and conduits within a PCS based on their risk level. It's kind of like a triage system. The most critical areas get the highest level of protection.
So not every component needs Fort Knox-level security.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Tell me more about these security levels.
Yeah, so the IEC 62443 standard defines four SLs ranging from, casual exposure to intentional attacks with extensive resources. Level one is for systems with minimal risk, while level four is reserved for those facing highly sophisticated targeted attacks.
So you assess the risk and then you apply the appropriate level of security.
Exactly. And this concept of SLs also applies to the individual products used within a PCS. The IEC 62443 standard outlines specific requirements for four types of components: software applications, embedded devices, host devices, and network devices.
It's like each piece of the puzzle needs to meet a certain security standard to ensure the overall integrity of the system.
Yeah.
But even with all these standards and guidelines in place, I imagine actually implementing these security measures can be a whole other challenge.
You're absolutely right. The article acknowledges some common hurdles that organizations face, including the complexity of the solutions, limited resources, concerns about disrupting operations, and a lack of, in-house cybersecurity expertise. It's a lot to handle.
So what's the solution? How can organizations actually put these recommendations into practice?
The article emphasizes the need for a comprehensive managed program that goes beyond just identifying vulnerabilities. It's about building a robust defense mechanism and constantly monitoring for threats. Think of it as a continuous cycle of assess, mitigate, and monitor.
Sounds like a full-time job, and then some. What are some of the key elements of such a program?
First and foremost, you need a solid plan for maintenance and testing. Complex systems rarely work perfectly right out of the box, and ongoing maintenance is crucial to ensure that those security configurations remain effective.
And regular testing is key to making sure those defenses actually hold up against real-world threats.
Absolutely, yeah. You also need to think about physical security. It's not enough to just secure the digital world.
Right.
You need to protect the physical infrastructure as well. Then access controls, surveillance systems, and even good old-fashioned locks and fences.
It's all about layers of protection, both digital and physical. What else is crucial for a successful cybersecurity program?
Clear and accessible documentation is a must.
Okay.
This includes everything from asset inventories and network diagrams to contact information for key personnel. You also need well-defined cybersecurity policies and procedures. These policies outline the rules of the road, so to speak, and they need to be clearly communicated to everyone in the organization.
So it's not just about the technology, but also about establishing a culture of security within the organization.
Exactly. Everyone needs to be on the same page and understand their role in keeping these systems safe. And speaking of understanding, education and training are absolutely essential. Employees need to be aware of the latest threats and know how to protect themselves and the systems they work with.
This is a lot to take in, but we're just getting started. We'll be back in a moment to dive deeper into the human element of cybersecurity and explore what a comprehensive managed program looks like in practice. Stay with us.
Stay with us. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Before the break, we were talking about the need for a comprehensive managed program to secure process control systems. It's a huge task, with so many moving parts.
It really is. We've talked about firewalls and passwords and all these technical measures, but the article also emphasizes the human element of cybersecurity. It's not just about the technology, it's about the people using it.
Exactly. You can have the most sophisticated security systems in the world, but if your employees aren't trained to recognize and respond to threats, you're still vulnerable.
It's like having an impenetrable fortress, but leaving the gate unlocked because someone forgot their key. What kind of things can organizations do to build a stronger security culture?
Well, it starts with leadership. Security needs to be a priority from the top down. Management needs to make it clear that cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility, not just the IT department's.
So it's about creating a culture where everyone understands the importance of security and feels empowered to report potential threats.
Absolutely, and that requires ongoing education and training. Employees need to be aware of the latest threats, like phishing emails and social engineering scams. They need to know how to spot suspicious activity and what to do if they encounter it.
Speaking of social engineering, the article mentions that these attacks are becoming increasingly sophisticated. What are some red flags people should be on the lookout for?
One common tactic is phishing emails that appear to be from a legitimate source, like a bank or a trusted colleague. These emails often try to trick people into clicking on malicious links or revealing sensitive information.
So always double-check the sender's address and be wary of any emails that seem out of place or ask for sensitive information. What other tactics do hackers use?
Another common approach is called pretexting. This is where an attacker impersonates someone in authority, like an IP technician or a law enforcement officer, to try to gain access to systems or information.
So if you get a call from someone claiming to be from IT, asking for your password, that should be a huge red flag.
Absolutely. Legitimate IT personnel would never ask for your password over the phone or through email.
It's a good reminder to be cautious and verify any requests for sensitive information. But even with the best training and awareness, mistakes can happen. That's where incident response planning comes in, right?
You're right, yeah. No matter how strong your defenses are, you need to be prepared for the possibility of a breach. And incident response planning is all about minimizing the damage and recovering quickly if an attack does occur.
So it's like having a fire drill for the digital world. Everyone knows what to do in case of an emergency.
Exactly. A good incident response plan will include a clear process for identifying and containing the breach, notifying the appropriate authorities, and restoring systems to a secure state.
The article mentions that regular testing of these incident response plans is crucial. Why is that so important?
Well, testing helps ensure that your plan is actually effective and that everyone knows their role in an emergency. You know, it's one thing to have a plan on paper, but it's another thing entirely to put it into practice under pressure.
It's like practicing a fire drill. You know, you might think you know what to do, but until you actually go through the motions, you don't really know how you'll react in a real fire.
Exactly. Testing helps identify any gaps or weaknesses in the plan and allows you to make adjustments before a real incident occurs. It also gives everyone an opportunity to practice their roles and build confidence in their ability to respond effectively.
So far, we've talked about building a strong security culture, training employees, and having a robust incident response plan.
Hmm.
What else is crucial for a successful cybersecurity program?
Well, one important aspect that often gets overlooked is vendor risk management. Organizations rely on third-party vendors for all sorts of products and services, from software applications to hardware components to maintenance and support.
And each of those vendors represents a potential point of vulnerability.
Exactly. A weak link in your vendor security could compromise your entire system. That's why it's crucial to carefully vet your vendors and ensure that they meet your security standards.
So it's not just about securing your own systems, but also about ensuring that your partners are equally vigilant. What kind of things should organizations look for when evaluating a vendor's security posture?
Well, you want to look for vendors who have strong security policies and procedures in place, who regularly conduct security assessments and penetration testing, and who are transparent about their security practices.
So don't be afraid to ask tough questions and demand proof that your vendors are taking security seriously.
Exactly. Your security is only as strong as the weakest link in your supply chain.
Speaking of testing and evaluating security, the article mentions something called red teaming. What exactly is that?
So red teaming is a proactive security approach where a dedicated team of ethical hackers simulates real-world attacks to identify vulnerabilities in your systems.
So it's like having your own in-house hacking team, but on the side of good.
Exactly. Red teams use the same tactics and techniques as real attackers, but their goal is to help you find and fix weaknesses before the bad guys can exploit them.
Sounds like a valuable exercise, but wouldn't it be more effective to just focus on preventing attacks in the first place?
Well, prevention is certainly important, but no security system is perfect. Red teaming helps you find those inevitable blind spots and make your defenses as strong as possible.
That's about being proactive rather than reactive. And I imagine those red team exercises can be pretty intense.
They can be. It's a constant, you know, cat and mouse game between the red team trying to find ways to breach your defenses and the blue team, your internal security team, trying to stop them.
Sounds like a great way to keep your security skills sharp and identify areas for improvement. What other proactive measures are recommended?
Continuous monitoring is essential. You need to constantly be on the lookout for any signs of trouble, whether it's unusual network activity, unexpected system changes, or even physical security breaches.
It's like having a security camera that's always recording, but instead of just capturing video, it's also analyzing data and looking for patterns that could indicate an attack.
Exactly. And with the increasing sophistication of attacks, continuous monitoring is becoming more important than ever. You need to be able to detect and respond to threats in real time before they can cause significant damage.
What kind of tools are used for continuous monitoring?
There are a variety of tools available, from intrusion detection systems that monitor network traffic for suspicious activity to security information and event management, or SIEM, systems that collect and analyze logs from various sources to identify potential threats.
It sounds like a lot of data to sift through.
It is, and that's why many organizations are turning to artificial intelligence, AI, and machine learning, ML, to help automate the process of threat detection and response.
So using AI to fight AI.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
It is. AI and ML can analyze vast amounts of data much faster than humans can, and they can identify patterns and anomalies that might go unnoticed by human analysts.
It sounds like a powerful tool in the fight against cybercrime. But even with AI and all these other proactive measures in place, what happens if a breach does occur?
That's where having a well-defined cybersecurity incident response plan becomes crucial. This involves developing a clear plan for what to do if an attack does occur. You know, it's about containing the damage, recovering quickly, and learning from the experience to improve your defenses in the future.
So it's not just about preventing attacks, but also knowing how to handle them effectively if they do happen.
Right. A good incident response plan will outline the roles and responsibilities of key personnel, the steps to be taken to contain the breach, the procedures for notifying affected parties, and the process for recovering systems and data.
It sounds like a complex process, but one that's absolutely essential for any organization that wants to protect itself from the devastating consequences of a cyber attack.
You're absolutely right. And one final aspect that's often overlooked but incredibly important is the security of your supply chain.
We talked about vendor risk management earlier, but what do you mean by supply chain security?
So it's about ensuring that every step in your supply chain, from the sourcing of raw materials to the manufacturing and delivery of your products or services, is secure. A compromise at any point in that chain could have ripple effects throughout your entire operation.
So if a hacker compromises a supplier's network, they could potentially gain access to your systems through that connection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why it's crucial to work closely with your suppliers to ensure that they have strong security practices in place. You need to understand their security posture, their incident response capabilities, and their overall approach to risk management.
So it's about building a culture of security that extends beyond your own organization and encompasses your entire ecosystem of partners and suppliers.
Precisely. And that requires open communication, collaboration, and a shared commitment to security best practices.
This has been an incredibly insightful deep dive into the world of PCS cybersecurity. We've covered a lot of ground, but I feel like we've only just scratched the surface.
Yeah, there's always more to learn in this ever-evolving field. But I think the key takeaway here is that securing PCS is not just an IT issue, it's a business issue.
Because the consequences of a breach can impact every aspect of an organization, from operations and finances to reputation and even public safety.
Precisely. And that's why it's so important for organizations to take this issue seriously and invest in the resources and expertise they need to protect these critical systems. We'll be right back with our final thoughts on this fascinating topic.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've spent this episode exploring the world of cybersecurity for process control systems. You know, those essential systems that power our everyday lives.
Right. And it's been clear that securing these systems is not a one-time fix, you know. It requires this continuous and layered approach encompassing everything from technical safeguards to human behavior.
You're absolutely right. And we've talked a lot about the IEC 62443 standard as a framework for securing PCS. It's a valuable resource. But as the article points out, you know, real world application, it goes beyond simply checking boxes.
Absolutely. Successfully implementing those recommendations requires collaboration with certified experts who understand the nuances of both the technology and the specific industry environment. It's about tailoring those guidelines to fit the unique needs and risks of each organization.
So you need someone who can translate the technical jargon into actionable steps and who can bridge the gap between the theoretical framework and the practical realities of a particular PCS environment.
Exactly. Someone who can, you know, speak both the language of cybersecurity and the language of the industry that they're working in.
It's about finding the right balance between security and functionality, right? Because you can't just shut everything down and lock it up tight. You know, these systems need to operate efficiently and reliably.
Precisely. And that's why it's so important to have this holistic approach to PCS security, one that considers all aspects of the system, from the physical infrastructure to the human operators to the supply chain.
And speaking of consequences, I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, the potential real-world impact of PCS vulnerabilities. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the technical details, but ultimately this is about people's lives.
You're right. Yeah, we're not just talking about, you know, data breaches or financial losses here. A compromised PCS could disrupt critical infrastructure, you know, leading to power outages, transportation disruptions, environmental damage, or even threats to public safety.
Yeah, it's a sobering thought. It makes you realize just how interconnected our world is and how reliant we are on these systems, you know, functioning properly.
Exactly. Think about the services that you use every single day. Electricity, water, transportation, communication, all of these rely on PCS to some extent.
It's almost impossible to imagine our modern world without these systems. So what does this all mean for our listeners? What can they do to ensure a safer and more resilient future?
Well, it starts with awareness. The more we understand about these threats, the better equipped we'll be to, you know, protect ourselves and systems we rely on.
So asking questions, staying informed, and demanding, you know, better security from the organizations we depend on are crucial first steps.
Absolutely. And it's not just about individual actions. It's about, you know, pushing for stronger regulations, supporting research and development in cybersecurity, and fostering a culture of security across all industries.
It's about recognizing that cybersecurity is not just an IT issue. It's a societal issue that affects us all. And as we've seen in this deep dive, it's an issue that requires a collective effort from individuals, organizations, and governments to address effectively.
Well said. We all have a role to play in securing our digital future.
That's a great note to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of PCS cybersecurity. We hope you have found it informative and empowering.
It's been a pleasure. And remember, knowledge is power. The more we understand about these threats, the better prepared we'll be to face them.
Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay secure.